young people being led away from Christianity by the Bible itself? Is that really happening? Let's talk about it with Dan Kimball on Steve Brown, Etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, Etc.
And this is Steve Brown, Etc. minus Steve Brown. So it's just Etc. this week. Dr. Brown will return next week. Have no fear. In the meantime, I am your humble guest host, Matthew Porter. Thanks for hanging out with us. We have an awesome show in the day. You're going to be glad that you dialed in. Our video director, John Myers, is in his tech bunker. Thanksgiving night, John will no doubt have visions of 50,000 light Christmas displays dancing in his head. Is that right, John? John does huge Christmas light displays, and I am looking forward to seeing what his design will be for this year. Our producer, Jinx, is in his little glass booth. I don't know Jinx's plans for Thanksgiving, but if you were to tell me that he was going to actually himself go out and kill his own turkey with a Mark 19 Desert Eagle pistol, I would not be surprised in the least. Dr. George Bingham is the president of Key Life. You know, the other morning I was going downstairs to the kitchen in the office here to get coffee, and George said, "Hey, coffee is for closers." So, okay. So given that, I guess I better tell you that this coming Tuesday is Giving Tuesday. And you guys know what Giving Tuesday is. So if you would care to support the work of Key Life, we would sure appreciate that. You are welcome to drop by keylife.org/give. And Kathy Wyatt is the soft, feminine side of the program. Kathy, are you officially a Lutheran yet?
I am. And you know what? I don't think there's anything else that I can do, because okay, I had my first Lutheran communion this past Sunday. So, and I passed the membership. I passed the membership class. They let me in. So
we have infiltrated.
That's great. So I had these really nice signs printed up and say, "Congrats, Kathy," and Comic Sans. I didn't know which door to nail it to. But I'll find
it. You need to
do it
95 times, though.
You can do it 95 times.
I think the reason they let me in, I got to get this down, my bracelet down far enough. I think the reason they let me in is because I have one of the solas tattooed on my wrist. So
that's legit.
I think that was probably what got me in. Yeah.
Great.
Exactly.
They tell you growing up and giving a speech, a visual aid is a very important way of telling a story. So there you go.
But the Bible prohibits tattoos, doesn't it, Dan?
Oh, what a marvelous transition, Dr.
YouTube
Bingham.
Channel's going to blow up. They want to see Kathy's tattoo.
We're going to have to hear what Dan has to say about that, because
you
I'm
guys
in trouble.
Tuned in for the right show. You're going to love our guest today, Dan Kimball is with us. Dan holds a master's degree from Western Seminary, where he is also on faculty. He also holds a doctorate degree from George Fox University. He also serves on staff at Vintage Faith Church in Santa Cruz, California. Dan has authored several books on leadership, church, and culture, and his latest is dynamite. We're going to dive into it today. It's called How Not to Read the Bible, Making Sense of the Anti-Woman, Anti-Science, Pro-Violence, Pro-Slavery, and Other Crazy Sounding Parts of Scripture. Dan, thanks for joining us.
Wow.
Thank you for having me.
You already have my nomination for Christian Book Publishing, the subtitle of the year. So
it takes two pages.
I appreciate you being here. So tell us, what's the premise of the book? Who's it written for?
Yeah, the book is written for, it's for both Christian and non-Christians, but it's mainly for, I'd say primarily for Christians that are, as they finally read the Bible, and we can talk all about this, there's things in the Bible that many have not realized have been in the Bible. And when they do read it, it catches them by surprise, and many don't know how to respond. So it's looking at some of the more difficult and disturbing things even in advance before people may necessarily read them. So they're prepared when they do see them, what to think about it.
That's great. If you're a Christian type person and you're like, Bible has odd stuff, I don't want to say you need to, I do need to say it. You need to read the Bible because it's there. It is there. We're going to dive into not only some of those examples, but what those mean and how those can not be a hindrance, but kind of a stepping stone to understanding the gospel better. What motivated you to write this?
Yeah, I've been serving in Santa Cruz, California for almost 30 years, and being in the same town, same churches, listening to the different issues that younger generations especially are faced with and going through. You know, over a couple decades, you see different patterns and trends. And the latest trend that keeps surfacing more and more is you're hearing stories of younger people especially that have been growing up in churches and had great Bibles, you know, stories, a lot of felt need, applicational teaching. They know all of the more happy, nice verses in the Bible. But as they move into the stages of faith where they start exploring things more on their own, questioning what they grew up with, which is natural and very good to do, and they start hearing, seeing on the internet or reading the Bible themselves, you know, verses about that are extremely violent, extremely anti-women sounding, very anti-science approach looking at scripture. So all of these things are hitting them. And then the stories of deconstruction start happening, doubting faith. And so it's addressing that. And it was something that I almost felt I couldn't help but write because it was coming up so often in conversations and online. Mm.
You know, you mentioned the young folks and current culture and memes. And I grew up, there's a comedian, Dennis Miller. I think he's a fellow in Northern California. Very sarcastic and smug and self-assured and funny, but kind of biting. It's like memes and the internet have allowed everybody in the entire world to be a Dennis Miller of like, let me hold this up for ridicule, blah, blah, blah. And it's not just, like you said, it's not just mocking it. It for young people who are trying to make sense of their world and the Bible, it does raise some very salient questions, which are good questions, but you even have them at the beginning of the book. Like the Bible doesn't mention cats at all, but there's one translation of the Bible that mentions unicorns 9 times. We're going to get into it, but just as an appetizer, what in the world is the unicorn thing about?
There, if you were to type in Google search unicorn and Bible, you will see a bunch of memes that actually have Bible verses post, you know, written part of the memes, and there's the word unicorn in them. So the question is, as you're looking at those, were mythical unicorns written in the Bible? And that's the question.
Yeah. Yeah. You have a whole explanation of what that is all about, but on its surface, you're like, golly, does it say that? I think I need to back up and kind of do a little research on this.
That again.
Yeah. And I got to do, I do have to say that the memes with Jesus riding a dinosaur look just adorable. I mean, I know they're being very mocking, but I'm like, that'd be awesome to see. So as you, you know, set the table for the book early on, there's four facts that you bring up that kind of create a framework and guide the reader, you know, as they read the Bible. Those are kind of controlling thoughts. I wonder if you could, list out what those facts are and how they help us.
Yeah. I mean, the good news in all of this is the Bible has not changed. You know, in other words, these aren't new things that suddenly no one has ever noticed before. And a lot of it, in my opinion, is due to a lack of training overall in general Bible study skills. And so with that missing, it's what's causing a lot of the confusion from both Christians and non-Christians who don't understand what the Bible is. So in the first part of the book, I cover kind of like the main I want to say like premise of Bible study methods to look at all of these passages through. And the four ones are: the Bible is a library, not a book. The second one is the Bible is written for us, but not to us, which is very important to understand. Never read a Bible verse is the third. And the fourth is all the Bible points to Jesus. So those are four things to apply to all of these disturbing and crazy sounding Bible verses. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, certainly we'll get into it, but there's a lot of verses you'll come across. You're like, I don't think I would ever see that verse probably cross-stitched and framed on somebody's wall. I don't see that being printed on fake wood and sold at Hobby Lobby anytime soon. But it's not just, you know, as you allude to, it's not just verses that we kind of like hope nobody notices. They're there for a reason. They're there for a purpose. And if we approach the Bible in an intellectually honest way, a way that's seeking truth, God has something for us there. He has treasures for those who will unearth it. And listen, if you're a pro Christian, you've been around for a while. This is not just for young believers or young people either. I was doing research this summer, rereading all the Moses story. I came across something I had never, ever seen before, just tucked in at the back of Exodus 4. God almost kills Moses before the story even starts. I don't know if you've seen that before. I read it, I reread it, three verses, and then we just move on. You're like, what? So whether you are an experienced Christian or you're just starting out, there's a lot of meat for us here to explore, and we will do that on the other side of the break. You're listening to Steve Brown, Etc.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
And you are listening to Steve Brown, Etc. This week, just Etc. Our guest is Dan Kimball, and his new book is called How Not to Read the Bible, Making Sense of the Anti-Woman, Anti-Science, Pro-Violence, Pro-Slavery, and Other Crazy-Sounding Parts of the Scripture. Before the break, I had just kind of, as a point of reference, touched on an experience I had just a couple of months ago coming across one of these parts of the Bible that don't immediately make sense, but you know, off the mic, you know, we were talking about how some of these stories need a larger context, and context is really anything. I mean, you could take, you know, I was thinking about it, you know, you could take a part of a conversation with me and my wife, and you could take part of it from something I say and go, oh, he sounds like a jerk. But if you understood the larger context, you would go, oh, I get it. He's a jerk and he's lazy. So context really matters in conversations, and in even more so with Bible. Would you agree with that, Dan?
Oh yeah, I mean, I would say the majority of these come from pulling Bible verses out, putting them on billboards, memes, you know, tweeting them, and not doing the full research on them to then say, like, what the heck is really going on here, to see what's behind it. I mean, you said the same thing. You said this, which is so important. Before we maybe go into some of the specific ones as examples, to me, the biggest thing that's going on, if you look on Google and you'll see there's a movie, it's a 60-second clip called Scary Mary. It's worth watching. it's a, everybody knows the story of Mary Poppins. So we know it's a good story. Mary is, you know, is there to help the family. And what someone did very cleverly was they took little clips of Mary Poppins. They have Mary staring at the kids in the bedroom and they get sucked up into the chimney. They have, you know, she's looking, I think, out the window when you'll see all of the other nannies blowing away that are walking up. You'll see like then the two kids are running away. And what they've done is they take tiny clips from the actual movie and then they put it to kind of a slow sort of a scary kind of music. And then they end it with, you know, scary Mary, hide your children. Like, and if you didn't know better, it would be a horror film. You know, just seeing those clips all put together, you don't know the original story. Scary Mary is a monster horror film after your kids. And I really think that's kind of what's going on with the Bible, with the violent verses a lot, that a lot of the things are being pulled out and focused on that are in the Bible. But if you know the whole story, and you know it from, you know, and you see God throughout history, the story of Jesus, you know, even the future, then you start seeing, oh, there's a bigger picture going on here. All I'm seeing are the little pieces and then coming to some conclusions that are inaccurate. And because we're in, this is, I believe we are in, and I think statistics would show this, probably the most biblically, you know, illiterate time periods in American history with both Christians out there, you know, with Christians and people that aren't of faith. So it's all the more prime to see this happen. Because if we don't know the scriptures, then all of this becomes all the more easy to get kind of sucked into and really start seeing, thinking is real. And the Bible and the God of the Bible is scary God, not loving, compassionate, forgiving God.
Can I kind of jump in, Dan? Because that went to a question that I wanted to bring up. Probably everybody is inclined to, you know, interpret the past based on their current experience and cultures, kind of interpret history according to their own cultural values and so forth. But it seems like it may be worse now than ever. And, you know, I think lack of biblical education may be part of it, but it seems like there could be other aspects contributing to that, too. Do you think that we're even worse than ever in terms of trying to impose current cultural values, current context on historical events and the past than we've ever been?
You mean what's the cultural climate right now or bringing out?
Yeah. I would say, for example, you know, perhaps with people in the past kind of having a little more classical education or something like that, they would understand, you know, cultural context of classical periods or the past or whatever. But now, for example, with slavery, you know, and that certainly as horrible and evil as that was, has become the, you know, the overall defining aspect of the past, and certainly of biblical times as well. So I'm just wondering if we're more inclined to do that than ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in a, I mean, that's why it's not like one of these perfect storms that have developed, but I think you're totally right with that. There's a climate of mistrust already in the Christian faith in general, you know, and then, so these, of course, slavery, there's Bible verses that really seem to demean women, like in horrible ways. There's so many of these things that are a match right now in the sensitivity our culture has, which then puts Christianity and the Bible under suspicion. When you're then seeing these Bible verses extracted and then, you know, put into full, you know, full display without context, backing up what already is under suspicion in our culture in general, and then specifically against the Christian faith, I'd say. So I think the climate's there for this. That's why I think it's happening at an accelerating rate.
We have a friend, Bishop Herbert Andrew, and he in one of his sermons he made a statement that stuck with me for years, and it's when you take a piece or a verse out of scripture, when you take it out of context, all you're left with is a con.
Yeah.
Remember that.
Yeah. I mean, it feels, if you're coming to it from an intellectually dishonest point of view or with an agenda to mock the Bible, there's a lot of low hanging fruit to put, like you said, put that Scary Mary version of the Bible together and pass that along. And the audience takes that. And if they're not thinking critically, can very easily walk away with the wrong interpretation of the Bible. As Steve often says, tell me about the Jesus that you don't believe in. And I probably don't either. We seem to live in a world where people make straw man arguments all the time. And I think the same is true of the Bible. I think you would agree with that, Dan.
Yeah. I mean, like, all right there, here's I want to say a classical story, because every human being has a different background and God's been working in their life in different ways. But there's I start off in the book with this very story. So I will tell you a classical story. And if I was a parent or a grandparent, I'd be wanting to pay attention to this. That we'll then talk about in a few minutes.
You're good. You're really good. See, why get a story when we can get a tease and then we can come back to that story. So we're going to pay that off on the other side of the break. We are talking to Dan Kimball. His book is called How Not to Read the Bible, Making Sense of the Anti-Women, Anti-Science, Pro-Violence, Pro-Slavery, and Other Crazy Sounding Parts of Scripture. Guys, we need to read our Bibles more and more in depth. But after that, check out Dan's book. We are coming back on the other side of the break. We'll see you then.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know. A gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
For hanging out with us on Steve Brown, Etc. And we are hanging out with author Dan Kimball. Keep up with him at dankimball.com and on the Twitters at Dan Kimball, KIMBALL. I don't know any other ways to spell it, but I felt like spelling it out for you there. So no excuse. Before the break, Dan teed up a really interesting story. I want to circle back to that.
Yeah. I mean, this, I'm going to give you a story here, and this is, I would say, pretty common, and more or less this is what's going on. There is an on-campus group in our town, and one of the leaders was having a struggle with the Bible, and then the leader of the whole group asked if they could meet with me, the person. So met with him, and it was a young guy that was atheist, and he was saying he was a leader, and now he no longer can believe. And so he had a very kind, this wasn't like angry at the church. This is what's really important. This isn't like the church is irrelevant. You know, they're not doing good music anymore. Like most churches are doing good music. Most churches have even bigger ones have light shows and everything's contemporary and relevant. So that's not the issue anymore. He was cared for by his youth pastor and loved. This was not like a burnout. I mean, bad experience with church leaders. It all of these things were there. What started happening was he got in a Bible study on his campus group through the book of Exodus. And he had been raised in the church, and he heard all, you know, he heard about Moses and the Ten Commandments and the Passover, and he heard all these stories. And he could tell you the basic Bible line story. But all of a sudden, he's reading through the book of Exodus, like verse by verse. And now he's like 18, 19 years old. So you think of this. And all of a sudden he's reading, and as his mind is thinking, because now we're in a questioning state about everything, which is good to be asking questions, and he sees like God had the firstborn of the Egyptians killed, right, in the Passover. It's a graphic, you know, we see the story, you know, we read it and we can kind of just keep reading like those Egyptians, but all of a sudden there are mothers and fathers who lost their children due to the Pharaoh's heart going against God. So he then started thinking, well, what about Herod in the New Testament? And he said that he, as he started thinking about Herod, we shun Herod and we say, that's evil. Herod killed the under 2-year-olds in Bethlehem. And he's evil. That's horrible. He killed children. And all of a sudden he starts making this connection. Well, wait a minute. God killed children here. Why is it okay for God to do that and Herod not? You know, and of course God's God and can do whatever he wants. But all of a sudden it started raising, right? Some, I never noticed this. Then in Exodus, you start reading about slavery, right? A father selling his daughter into slavery. And at first reading, it looks like that's approved by God. Then all of a sudden you're reading strange things about God wanting to kill Moses about foreskin and circumcision. And then you start reading all of these things like God instructing Moses to go and kill people. Then all of a sudden, you know, the nice stories are like, wait a minute, I didn't know this was here and this was here and this was here. And it starts causing understandable doubt. And then here's what he did. All right. He goes to his parents. And the other one was about women. We'll talk about women. You know, and it says, women, be silent. Don't ask your mother anything in church. I'm sorry. Don't ask your, don't ask questions in the church. Go home and ask your husband, be quiet. And he's like, wait a minute. I never quite paid attention to that one either. So he has all these questions and he types in on Google and it's like the Bible verses. And then he said he was flooded with all of these websites. And he mentions one, evilbible.com. You can look at it right now, evilbible.com. But he said, then he realized there wasn't just a few, there's hundreds of verses. And then he became aware of all of the things in the scriptures that were troubling. And then seeing memes. And for him, then he went to his parents and they said, oh, that's in there? So his parents were unaware. So his parents that he loved and they loved him, it was kind of like, oh, my mom and dad really don't even know this and they believe this. Then he went to his youth pastor and had the same kind of reaction. He started hearing from his peers and leaders, we really don't know, but in heaven one day we'll know. And then, you know, it was sort of a, like he wasn't getting answers even from those that he knew closely. And the more research he did online, then unfortunately there's websites that are direct, you know, just filled with this. And for him, it caused a deconstruction of faith. And what I'll say is that's so becoming so common because we haven't gone through those troubling passages and then it's catching people off guard. And you hear this in many of the deconstruction stories of faith, especially when you hit your 20s and even your 30s, you know, like, do I really believe this? And then it's just prime to say, look, women, you're demeaned. The Bible's crazy. It's got talking snakes in it. You have, you know, it's a violent, violent book, you know, cutting body pieces up into 12 parts. There's witchcraft, there's cannibalism. All of these things are being pulled up to the surface. And like, I didn't know that was in there. And then it's just like, what the heck do I believe? And in our culture, it's easy then to just have it all fall apart.
You know, there's part of that story I loved where they first came across the problematic-ish part. You're like, what does that mean? What a wonderful place to be. What a wonderful spot where you come across something that you don't understand in the Bible and go, what does this mean? That can go into some really great places or some really bad places, depending on which path you take. I think what people are feeling like a lot of times is not just the oddness, but they're feeling an immediate lack of internal consistency with the narrative. But it is there if you will look for it. And if we don't know all the answers right away, that's okay. We can look together and we can discover it. And that's a good thing. Guys, we're going to be right back.
It was irritated when the electricity went out. No television, no music, no Netflix. Then he discovered that the battery on his smartphone was dead. He decided to make some coffee, but when he went to the kitchen, he realized that without electricity, he couldn't even do that. Then he noticed his wife in the kitchen, and he sat down and talked to her. He said later, "You know, she seemed like a very nice lady." I know, technology's good, but sometimes go talk to somebody face to face. You might be surprised how nice and real they are. It's messy sometimes, but Jesus would like it. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com.
Thanks for listening to Steve Brown, etc. By the way, we mentioned this once earlier, but this Tuesday, December 1st, is Giving Tuesday, and that's a worldwide day when folks give generously to nonprofits like Key Life. And if you're in the giving mood this year and want to help out what we do here, go to keylife.org/give. We are talking to author Dan Kimball. He wrote a great book. He's also, like me, blessed with the spiritual gift of great hair. I recognize that in you, brother, and that's great. And before the break, we've been talking about some of the odd stuff in the Bible and how it can be almost weaponized in a way to send people away from the heart of Christianity if it's used in with that kind of agenda. But it's all there for a purpose. We've kind of toplined some of the categories of this as far as anti-women, anti-science, pro-violence, pro-slavery. Dan, I'd love for us to kind of dig in a layer deeper and get into some of those specifics of objections that people have with the content of the Bible. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, and this is why I have studied all of these passages pretty much. And what I can say is I have 100% confidence in the Bible that God inspired it. There's reasons for these things being in there when you look into them to understand them. So everything I'm saying is it's a great, you know, it's totally hopeful. And this is, there's a lot of gloomy stuff, but it's totally hopeful when you do the research and you look into it. That's why I'm so passionate to make sure people understand this. And so say for instance, like that unicorn story that you brought up in the beginning, right? So I get my haircut. I was into rockabilly and The Clash and some of these bands. I was always trying to put my, you know, copy them in their hair back then. So I get my haircut, and the barber's 30 years old. He's not a Christian. He classifies himself as atheist. And one day I go in there, and he's like, so he knows I'm a Christian. He's like, so there's unicorns in your Bible. And I'm just like, well, I had not known that before. And he's like, I've seen them online. I see like these Bible verses with unicorns. So I didn't know how to respond to it because I had not at that time seen it. So then I go in, unicorn plus Bible. And sure enough, there's memes with Bible verses from Isaiah and other places that are then using the word unicorn. And I'm like, I know I've not seen that word. I would remember that for sure. But now my barber can be a little mocking, you know, so he's like, look, you believe in unicorns from a surface level. It says it, there's the Bible verses online, there's the graphics, you know, and so unicorns in the Bible, you Christians believe in mythical, silly things like that. You go and so then what do you do? All right, where is that verse? Any verse you read that's peculiar. In that case, it was an easy answer because you look into what was going on and you'll find out that the word unicorn was the English word used in the 1611 translation of the King James version of the Bible. And there is a Hebrew word that they didn't know at the time what to translate it into that seemed to indicate it was some sort of one-horned animal. Likely in most, it was a wild oxen of that time period that was in that geographic area. So they chose the word unicorn. Through time, people don't look at it. It stays in certain Bible translations. And then it seems like we then equate it with the mythical creature, the unicorn. That's not what it was. And in most Bible translations today, they don't use it. But here's the point. online, if I'm not researching it, I'm just seeing unicorns in the Bible, those silly Christians, because it certainly, it projects that, you know, when you just see it, but you have to stop and look into it. And that's, again, a silly example, but let me look at some of these other ones. Slavery, right? This is, you mentioned this earlier. This is right? Slavery right up front is evil. It is evil, 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 evil. It's evil. So what do you do when in the Old Testament you see what seems to be God endorsing slavery? He gives some guidance into what to do with how to care for your slaves and things like that. It's not just the Old Testament. The New Testament has slaves, obey your masters, right? Clearly in the New Testament. What do I do with that? There was an atheist group that rented a billboard with a horrible photograph and then the Bible verse, slaves obey your masters, underneath it. And then it's like, you know, you look at you Christians, you believe that it's okay to have slavery, right? Now, I'm just driving by that billboard. I'm like, yikes, Christians. Oh, I remember in America, you know, the Civil War and that the Bible, I guess, does. There it is on the billboard. It's approving slavery, right? Let's go back to those principles. Never read a Bible verse. You know, don't just look at it. You always should look at the context, the chapter, what book it's in. The Bible was not written to us, but for us. That is Dr. John Walton from Wheaton came up with that saying. He's always saying that the book of Romans was not written to the, you know, the church in 2020. It was written to the Christians in Rome, right? Way back then. The book of Revelation wasn't written to us. It was written for us. We learn from it. We can see things, but it was written to who? The seven churches. You have to go back and say, who was the original books written to and what was their world? So then that we can understand that. That's the major problem, is that our modern form of Christianity generally just wants to look at the Bible and everything has to apply to us instantly. And it must mean because we're so almost me-centered. Mm. Now, I understand we want to have scripture applied to us, and it does apply to us. I'm not saying that, but let's go back to slavery. You go back to the Old Testament and there's verses that are graphic. They sound horrible. It talks about a dad selling his daughter into slavery. Like, we go like, what is that? Why would God possibly endorse something like that? One, the English word slavery is, we always have to say, what was the original word? What was translated into English? Because words in Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek may not, when it's translated into English, we have to always look at what was going on back then. What was the original meaning? You know, the word date in English, like when we read, it can mean a fruit. It can mean a date on the calendar. It can mean a romantic date if you're going out. Like, you always have to look at the words. What were they in the original, so we can understand more in how it's applied today? In the Old Testament times, people would be used as servants in a situation where you'd sell yourself into serving a family. The same in the New Testament. We'll talk about this. And it was in that case with the dad. They didn't have Social Security. They didn't have Medicare. They didn't have the systems in place. It was a barbaric time period. And if in this particular case, we don't know what's going on, a dad would then allow his daughter to be brought into a servanthood, into a family, and you would sell your daughter. And the main motivation would have been to care for her so she would have food and shelter. We can't understand that in our modern mindset, right? It's like, that's crazy to even think of, but that isn't our world. So when you go back into that world and you see what was going on, it wasn't as just surface horrible as we think it was, because it was a different world and we can't ignore that. And so it was actually done out of care and it's been twisted around to something entirely different. And I want to talk about the New Testament afterwards, because that's more recent times, and compare it to what we think of modern slavery today.
Wow. And I would love to do that. We're going to maybe do that on another show. We are out of time. We didn't even get into the anti-science stuff.
Guys, have to get the book.
There's so much good stuff here.
Have a follow-up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You've got to get this book. It could not be more relevant and more needed right now. People are asking questions. You know what? We should be asking questions. So check out the book called How Not to Read the Bible. Our guest has been Dan Kimball. Guys, we'll see you on the other side for one more segment.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
You are listening to Steve Brown, Etc. Thanks for spending time with us. Speaking of spending, next time you're on Amazon, if you happen to be buying stuff in the coming weeks, if that's something that might be on your calendar, you can help out Key Life at the same time at no extra cost to you. Just check out keylife.org/Amazon smile for details. So in thinking about what our conversation was with Dan, something came to mind. There's an amazing video that you can find online if you Google Nikola Tesla 3D anamorphosis. So what you're going to see in this video, it's a sculpture, but it all amounts to this big random pile of objects. There's a printer, there's an old TV, there's a megaphone. It just looks like this jumbled pile of stuff until you get down to the end of this sculpture and you look back with the proper singular perspective, and you can see what was a moment ago random objects actually forms this startling and beautiful image of inventor Nikola Tesla. As we heard from Dan, the Bible is kind of like that too. There's individual events and people that are understandable on their own. They all hold insights for us about God and his nature and his purpose for us. But we always have to keep in view that that God is an artist, and he's painting a picture across the entire canvas of human history and existence. And when we read his book, we will come across those individual pieces that don't seem to make sense on their own. And we might even think, I wouldn't mind if this wasn't even the Bible. But when we get God's perspective and when we look back at history from his point of view, what is a seemingly random collection of events and people actually forms this startling and beautiful image of Jesus. So when you hit the wall, you get frustrated reading something in the Bible that doesn't make sense, that's okay. Feel frustrated, but stick with it, because God is not only creating a masterpiece for us to enjoy, it's a masterpiece that we get to be a part of. Kathy, who do we have for next week?
Next week, Jim Stout, retired pastor, friend of Steve's for many years, with some really interesting background stuff and stories to tell, has struggled with bipolar disorder and some other, you know, mental health issues, et cetera. The guy's the real deal, and he's got some great stories to share and an amazing example of God's faithfulness.
Mm. A lot of good stuff, and that kind of that topic could not be more relevant right now, and that is good planning. Christmas is coming, and for a lot of folks, that's awesome, and for a whole lot of folks, that is a dark period of time. We need to understand mental health better, and when we listen to this guest next week, I feel like we're going to walk away with a better understanding. Guys, thanks for hanging out with us. Join us again next week. Don't forget to subscribe right now. That would be awesome. In the meantime, you guys be safe, stay dangerous.